After being confused about his duty and the source of his existence, he performed austerities, and then, by the grace of the Lord, he was able to actually see the Lord. Upon seeing the Lord, Brahma began to offer prayers, glorifying the Lord's transcendental form, explaining how the Lord reciprocated with everyone, practically speaking. Even one can say that he even perfectly reciprocates with the non-devotees, personally too. Of course, they want something and he gives them what they want. But also, the non-devotees ignore him. So how should he treat them if he's reciprocating? He ignores them. So practically speaking, for the non-devotees, even though he is in their heart, practically speaking, he is not in their hearts. So Brahma offered his prayers and begged from the Lord the ability to proceed with the creation. And not only to proceed with the creation, because one needs to be empowered by Krishna to do anything in this world. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that he is the ability within man. This means that if anyone has any capacity, any ability to do anything, it is a gift of Krishna, and therefore no one should ever be proud of what they have. There's a saying in English, I can't remember it exactly, but something about borrowed plumes. What is it? Something about someone's proud of his borrowed plumes. Plumes means feathers. So if we have someone's wearing a feather costume or something like that, he's proud of his feathers. But no, they are not his, they are given to him. So similarly, whatever we can do is not coming from us directly, but it is Krishna's gift, and therefore we should be thankful to Krishna, we should be humble, and we should use that gift, whatever it is. And everyone has certain gifts, everyone has certain abilities. And that's one thing that really should be done as we develop our Krishna consciousness, is we should develop our specific individual abilities. And with those, we should make those an offering to Krishna and serve him with great devotion. Offering to him just exactly what we have by his grace, humbly. So, Brahma finished his prayers. After all his austerities, their ultimate success of seeing the Lord, he finished. And then the Lord responded, and we heard the Lord's response yesterday, how he explained transcendental knowledge, how he was the one who had revealed his position to Brahma by his grace. He had allowed Brahma to actually see him. And he explained, in essence, the Chatusloki Bhagavatam again, where he explained how he is not knowable. That through devotion, because one is not knowable, Krishna is not knowable by anyone's power. One needs devotion. But even devotion isn't sufficient to allow us to understand Krishna, because Krishna does not reveal himself to anyone unless he desires to reveal himself. So it is not exactly anything that the devotee does that allows him to understand Krishna, but it is Krishna's causeless mercy. There is nothing that one can do that can force Krishna to show himself. It is only Krishna's causeless mercy. But one can attract that causeless mercy. by one's selfless devotion, but ultimately it's Krishna's free desire to show himself, to reciprocate with his devotee, that causes Krishna to benedict the devotee with his mercy. So Krishna explains, or the Lord explains, that by being absorbed in devotion, one can see Krishna in himself, in every other living entity, and within every element of the universe. And one should understand, one should not see himself without reference to the omnipotency of the Lord. That means that Krishna is everywhere and we too are not separated from him. So when one understands that Krishna is in everything, then when one looks at anything, he will see Krishna. And when he understands his relationship with Krishna as part of his vision, that everything is part of Krishna, everything is meant for Krishna's service, and I too am meant for Krishna's service, then one, with that transcendental vision, one can be free from all kinds of illusion. Because by Krishna's grace, one will not come under the sway of the material energy if one has that vision. And practically speaking, that is the only way to keep free of Maya. Just like the only way to keep free of darkness is to remain always within the sun. So the way to remain free of Maya is to remain always in Krishna consciousness. That means something very, very simple. That means always be absorbed on one level or another level of thinking about Krishna. And thinking of him anukulena, Krishna anushilam, in a very positive way. Oh Krishna, everything is yours. I am your servant. I too am yours. Let me please serve you. That is actually the meaning of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Please, Krishna, allow me to serve. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, allow me to serve. So after describing all this to Lord Brahma, the Lord disappeared. So this, remember, this is stories inside of stories inside of stories. So Maitreya Muni is explaining this to Vidura. And Sutta and Sukadeva Goswami is explaining what Maitreya Muni explained to Vidura to Maharaj Prickett, and Sutta Goswami is explaining to the sages of Namasharanya what Sukadeva was explaining to Maharaj Prickett, which was what Maitreya was explaining to Vidura. So after explaining about Brahma and his dealings with the Lord, and how Brahma was thereby empowered, infused with the ability to create and the instructions how to create while being free from all pride. Naturally, Vidura asked in text 1 of the 10th chapter, what happened next? What went on with the creation? How did Brahma create? So now, in this chapter, and in quite a few other chapters, the description is going to go on about the creation of Brahma. But before we hear directly about the creation of Brahma, which is called Visarga, the creation of Krishna, the primary creation, is called Sarga. And that which Brahma creates based on the creation of Krishna is called Visarga. So before we hear about Brahma's creation, we're going to get a list of all the creations. And then one element is going to be added, because without this one element, there's no question of any creation in the material world. And that element is time. And that time factor, that time element, is the potency of Krishna. So in the next, this chapter, and in the next chapter, in chapter 11, which we'll cover tomorrow, we will hear about time in relationship in this chapter to creation. So, before we hear about Brahma's creation, we have to get the perspective. Because Brahma, even though he is called the greatest, Krishna is the Parabrahma, the supreme greatest. So Brahma's greatness is based on Krishna's greatness. Brahma's creation is based on Krishna's creation. So after the Lord left, Vidura, after hearing how the Lord left after speaking with Brahma, Vidura says, "O great sage, O Maitreya Muni, please let me know how Brahma, the Pitamaha, the grandfather of all the planetary inhabitants, created the bodies of the living entities from his own body and mind after the disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So that specific topic is going to be discussed, how Brahma created all the living entities. There's a preliminary discussion in this chapter, and then a discussion of the time factor in the next chapter, and then in the 10, 11, and then chapter 12, the description of how Lord Brahma creates the living entities, and will begin. And that is very interesting when we get to that. We'll hear how it's like everything in the material world. This is the first real, when Krishna is creating, everything is working perfectly. As soon as Brahma starts creating, there's something good created, and then there's a problem with that creation, and then there's something else created, and then that goes that way, and then this goes this way, and this problem, something good, something bad. Because that is the very nature of the material world, right from the very beginning. And believe me, that will not change. Even if we try our best to make something very, very wonderful, that will never go wrong. So, that we'll hear about in chapter 12. And then in 13, we'll hear about the first incarnation of the Lord. Well, not exactly the first incarnation, but more or less, almost the first incarnation of the Lord. Just after the creation, the universe is starting to become populated, and the first creation, the incarnation of Varahadeva comes in a wonderful way. So that will be, we'll hear some of that in the 14th, 15th, histories relating to that in the 14th, 15th, and 16th chapters. So now back to chapter 10. So he asks, "Please tell me how Brahma created," he asked Maitreya Muni. "Eradicate my doubts, O greatly learned one, and let me know of all that I have inquired from you from the beginning to the end." Let me know about Brahma's creation from the beginning to the end. And we're going to hear about so much of that. And actually speaking, at the end of the 12th chapter, we hear about Swayambhuva Manu and his creation. And then more or less the remainder of the third and fourth canto is about the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu. So this topic will be continued from beginning to the end for two cantos. Then Maitreya Muni began to reply. In text 4, "O Vidura, Brahma thus engaged himself in penances for 100 celestial years, as advised by the personality of Godhead, and applied himself in devotional service to the Lord." So this was actually stated in the 30th verse of the previous chapter, where the Lord instructed him, "O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation, and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you will be able to understand everything from within your heart." So he, Brahma, followed the instructions of the Lord. The Lord told him to do something, and then he left, and then Brahma began to follow those instructions, and he engaged himself for 100 celestial years, not earthly years, not solar years, which are equal to thousands of our years. So as advised by the Lord, he applied himself in devotional service of the Lord, performed these austerities. Thereafter, after the austerities were completed, he was sitting upon his lotus, and he saw that both the lotus on which he was situated and the water on which the lotus was growing, they were trembling due to a strong, violent wind. So a very terrifying situation arose immediately. There's one incident that Prabhupada related, where right after he took sannyas, he accepted the renounced order of life, he was walking down a road and a bull came and gored him. And Prabhupada was thinking, what is this? I just took sannyas and a bull comes and gores me? So, in one sense, something similar happened to Brahma. Krishna gave him all benedictions, he follows Krishna's instructions, and the first thing that happens is there's difficulty. What difficulty? The water and the wind, his lotus he was sitting on, began to tremble due to the strong, violent wind. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The material world is called illusory, because it is a place of forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. Thus, one engaged in the Lord's devotional service in the material world may sometimes be very much disturbed by awkward circumstances. Awkward means difficult. It is the exact opposite of what you wanted to happen, and that's what happens. Performing devotional service, we expect everything to go perfectly, smoothly, exactly the way we would write the script. But it never works like that. Never. There's always disturbance, and one finds oneself placed in awkward circumstance. There is a declaration of war between the two parties, the illusory energy and the devotee. And sometimes the weak devotees fall victim to the onslaught of the powerful illusory energy. Lord Brahma, however, was sufficiently strong by the causeless mercy of the Lord, and he could not be victimized by the material energy, although it gave him cause for anxiety when it managed to totter the existence of his position. So, not defeated, although anxiety, long penance and transcendental knowledge of self-realization had matured Brahma in practical knowledge. And thus, Brahma knew what to do when in this difficult situation. What did he do? He drank the wind completely along with the water. Thereafter, after all the water of devastation was gone and the wind had stopped, thereafter, Brahma saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe. He couldn't see this before. And he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. So that means that all the planetary systems, we actually heard this in the beginning, that the lotus contained all the creation. But after Brahma drank the water, he saw that the lotus and all the planetary systems were actually already spread throughout the universe in a seed form. So he could understand, and he was trying to understand how to organize this so he could create and systematize the universal system according to the desire of Krishna. So he was empowered to do this. Prabhupada explains in the purport that the seeds of all the planets in the universe were impregnated in the lotus on which Brahma was situated. All the planets were already generated by the Lord, and all the living entities were also born in Brahma. So Brahma, again, isn't actually the prime creator. He is creating that which had already been created. And if we remember this at the beginning of the third canto, Narada Muni asks, "Are you the creator? I see that you've practically speaking done everything." And Brahma says, no, no, immediately he says, no, I am not the creator. But rather, it is Krishna, and I'm just the secondary creator. I just create what has already been created by him. So the material world and the living entities were already generated to seedling forms by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Brahma was to disseminate the same seedlings all over the universe. The real creation is therefore called Sarga, and later on the manifestation by Brahma is called Visarga. So thus engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma entered into the whirl of the lotus, the center of the lotus, and as it spread all over the universe, he divided it into three divisions of worlds and later into 14 divisions. So in this way, Brahma created the different divisions, the different higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. And why were these 14 different, first three, the upper, middle, and lower, and then the 14 different planetary systems, why are these created? Because there are living entities with different desires and living entities with different amounts of piety, what they deserve. So they have to be situated within different bodies in different situations according to their karma, according to their desires and according to what they deserve. So the living entities, or rather the first the planetary systems are created and then the living entities will be populated within the universe according to the suitable place for them. So this was the end. This is the end of the first section of this chapter where Brahma's primary activities of creation are described. Now, of course, it's going to be detailed later, but Vidura asks another question of Maitreya. O my Lord, O greatly learned sage, kindly describe eternal time, which is another form of the Supreme Lord, who is the wonderful actor. What are the symptoms of that eternal time? Please describe them to us in detail. So he wants to know what happens, what is the effect of time within this world? Because this energy of Krishna is very, very subtle. We look at our watches and we see the hands moving and we watch the days turn into nights and the nights turn into days and the seasons change and the years change. But what is that energy that moves the creation forward? That is time. No one can reverse time. Every once in a while there's always a popular science fiction theme about someone gets in a time machine and goes backwards or something like that. It cannot be reversed. Time cannot be reversed. It is unstoppable in its particular actions. So he's asking, Vidura is asking Maitreya, because they're talking about creation. He was talking about Brahma's creation. So what? He knows that time is required to move the creation forward. So he's asking about time and what it does. Describe this in detail. So Maitreya Muni begins to answer in text 11. Eternal time is the primeval source of the interaction of the three modes of material nature. So if you remember in the beginning of the creation, when the Lord glances at the mahatattva, or the padan, the primal ingredient, he injects within it the living entities along with their karma, but he also injects this kala shakti, which is the essence of the material energy in one sense. It is the force behind the modes of material nature. It makes everything move. Time. Nothing happens without the passage of time. So it is the primeval source, the original source of the interaction of the three modes of material nature. It is unchangeable and limitless. It goes forever. And it works as the instrument of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his pastimes in the material creation. Prabhupada explains in the purport. So this is the basic understanding of time and the prime understandings, the prime concepts in here, that it makes the modes of material nature work. It is unchangeable, it keeps on going, unstoppable, limitless. It goes on for how long? Forever, eternity. One cannot conceive of the stoppage of time or the length of time that time will go on for. It is inconceivable. And it works. What is the purpose of this powerful energy? It works as an instrument of the personality of Godhead and its pastimes in the material creation. It makes the material world work. It is Krishna's energy in the material world that pushes it forward. So it's another aspect of Krishna in the material world. So we'll read some of the purport. The impersonal time factor. It's impersonal, but it's Krishna's time factor. It acts impersonally, but it is Krishna's factor. Is the background of the material manifestation as the instrument of the Supreme Lord. It is the ingredient of assistance offered to material nature. It is Krishna pushing the material nature in an impersonal way. No one knows where time began and where it ends. And it is time only which can keep a record of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material manifestation. So we'll hear about that, what that exactly means, especially in the next chapter. But it means that time is measured, or the measurement of time is in reference to space, to something occurring in existence. So time is measured in that way. And by the measurement of time, one can keep track of the creation and destruction of the material world. Just like we say, 10 years have passed, or 2,000 years have passed. So we can keep track by understanding that this happened in 1947, and this happened in 1922, and this happened in 1496. It is used to keep track of the different creations and destructions of the material world. This time factor is the material cause of creation and therefore a self-expansion of the personality of Godhead. Time is considered the impersonal feature of the Lord. Time is astronomically and mathematically calculated. How do we measure time? In relationship to speed, change and life of a particular object. This is a very scientific way to look at time. Factually, however, time has nothing to do with the relativities of things. Rather, everything is shaped and calculated in terms of the facility offered by time. In other words, although time is measured, or material things are measured in terms of its relationship to time, time itself is independent from these material things. Time is the basic measurement of the activity of our senses by which we calculate past, present, and future. But in factual calculation, time has no beginning and an end. We could say it's time to wake up, it's time to go to sleep, it's time for Bhagavatam class, it's time for RT, it's time to get old, it's time to die. But actually, time has nothing to do with these things, and it has no beginning and no end, although the things that we measure by time have beginning and end. Pandit Chanakya says that even a slight fraction of time cannot be purchased with millions of dollars. Once it's gone, it's gone. And therefore, even a moment of time lost without profit must be calculated to be the greatest loss in life. Time is not subject to any form of psychology, nor are the moments objective realities in themselves. A moment of time is not separate from the material world is dependent on other things, but time itself is independent. Therefore, Jiva Goswami, Śrīla Jiva Goswami concludes that the time factor is intermixed with the activities, actions and reactions of the external energy of the Lord. The external energy or material nature works under the superintendence of the time factor as the Lord Himself. And that is why material nature appears to have produced so many wonderful things in the cosmic manifestations. Bhagavad Gita 9.10 confirms this, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suryate Satcharacharan. So now Maitreya Muni continues, explaining this point in the verse. This cosmic manifestation is separated from the Supreme Lord as material energy by means of color, which is the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Lord. So it is that which this factor of time, which is so much the material energy, or it is so much the Lord's energy, which traps us in the material world. It is situated as the objective manifestation of the Lord under the influence of the same material energy of Vishnu. And here's Prabhupada's purport. So this is in some ways very hard to understand, but time is the energy of the Paramatma, of the Super Soul, that makes the material world go on. And it traps the living entity by the actions and reactions of the material world. The living entities are trapped within the material world. And that time, therefore, is Krishna's powerful, unstoppable potency. Prabhupada's purport. As stated previously by Narada before Vyasadeva, Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivatara. This unmanifested world is the self-same personality of Godhead, but it appears to be something else beyond or beside the Lord. So we've heard this before. Bina prakutam astadam kammano buddha evacha aham karityame. This material energy is Krishna. It is not different from Krishna. But we don't see it as Krishna. Why? This is the effect of the time factor. So it appears to be something else or something different from the Lord, something beside the Lord, because of its being separated from the Lord. So what separates it? We usually say Maya, but here it is said by means of kala, or the time factor. That separates. It is something like the tape-recorded voice of a person who is now separated from the voice. As the tape recording is situated on the tape, so the whole cosmic manifestation is situated on the material energy and appears separate by means of kala, time. The material manifestation is therefore the objective manifestation of the Supreme Lord and exhibits His impersonal feature so much adored by impersonal philosophers. So when Prabhupada says the objective manifestation, it means the real, it is a real manifestation, but it is temporary. But it is not mitya, like the Mayavadis say. It is not false. It is real, but it is temporary. So in that sense, it is objective, and it actually exists. It's not just illusory. If the opposite of objective is subjective, it is not just I'm imagining that it's there, but it's not there. No, it's actually there, but it's temporarily there and always changing. This cosmic manifestation is as it is now. It was the same in the past and it will continue in the same way in the future. So first he's explained time and its all-powerful force in relationship to the material world. And what's so important for us to understand in this is that this time factor is Krishna, and therefore it is unstoppable. There's an English saying that time and tide wait for no man. Time pushes and pushes and pushes, whether we like it or not. We criticize the material world, and the materialists who want to stay within the material world. But whether even if one wants to stay within the material world, even one wants to stay young and stay here and thinks it's the most wonderful place, one cannot. Because this time factor pushes, and it pushes until it crushes. And unless one has a spiritual perspective on this, if one is a materialist, one sees that this is, hears that the time factor is Krishna, one thinks that Krishna is very cruel. But there is a spiritual purpose behind this. And the spiritual purpose is that we understand that we should not stay in the material world. We have somewhere else to be, a spiritual place. So Krishna foils each and every one of our material plans by this time factor, which pushes the modes of material nature one after another. Goodness, passion, ignorance, destruction. Satisfaction, desire, destruction. Destruction, creation, annihilation. One after another. So now, after explaining the force of time and how the creation takes place by Brahma, now Maitreya Muni is going to describe the 10 different types of creations. Out of these 10, some of them are the primary creations, the Sarga creations made by the Lord, and others are secondary creations based on the creations of the Lord made by Brahma. So Maitreya Muni continues, there are 9 different kinds of creations beside the one which naturally occur to the interactions of the modes. There are 3 kinds of annihilations due to eternal time, the material elements, and the quality of one's work. So, if one wants to understand the actions of time in this world, all one has to understand is 3 things. There is creation, there is maintenance, something is created, something stays for some time, and then there is destruction, annihilation. So sometimes this happens slowly, sometimes it happens rapidly, but this is all that goes on. For everything that is created, it will be destroyed. This is the force of unstoppable time, Krishna's energy. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. So Prabhupada explains the 3 types of annihilations. He mentions the 3 types of annihilations in the purport, and these will be explained later on in the Bhagavatam too. The 3 types of annihilations are due to scheduled time of the entire universe, due to a fire which emanates from the mouth of Ananta at the bottom of the universe, and due to one's qualitative actions and reactions, karma. So now he's going to explain the 10 different creations, and we'll go over these quite quickly. So he first divides them into 9 and 1, and then he divides that into 6, 7, 7 and 4. 7, 8, 9, 10, 6 and 4. Of the 9 creations, the first one, we'll go over them one by one, but quickly. The first one is the creation of the Mahatattva, or the sum total of the material ingredients. We've heard so far 1 time in Canto 2, 2 times in Canto 3 already, we've heard about the creation of the Mahatattva by the Lord. That's the first creation. So that's the Lord's creation. Wherein the modes interact due to the presence of the Supreme Lord. In the second creation, the false ego is generated. So we've heard about this 3 times already. And we're going to hear about it 1 more time in the third canto, at the end of the third canto. And then we'll take a break from hearing about the creations for until the 12th canto. And then we'll hear about it 1 more time. So in the second creation, false ego is generated. And due to false ego, the material ingredients, material knowledge, and material activities arise. When, we've also heard about this, when false ego combines with the 3 modes of each of the 3 modes of material nature. The sense perceptions are created in the third creation. So sense perceptions are the interaction of false ego with the mode of ignorance. That's the third creation. And from these, the elements are created. So that's by the third creation and the false ego with the mode of ignorance. The fourth creation is the creation of knowledge and the working capacity, and that is a combination of false ego with the mode of passion. The fifth creation is that of the controlling deities by the interaction of the mode of goodness. So when goodness mixes with false ego, the demigods are created. And the mind, of which the mind is the sum total. The sixth creation is ignorance. Darkness of the living entities by which the master acts as a fool. So the sixth creation is the creation of ignorance, the illusion that puts the living entities into the bewilderment. Because these the three creations prior to this, if you remember back a few chapters, we heard about the Ariyatmik, Aridaivik, and Aribhautika persons. How we think that we're one person, the acting of the body is just me acting. But there's actually three persons. There's the gross body, which is the Aribhautika person. And then there's the Ariyatmika person, the sense of self based on the mind. And then there's the Aridaivika person, or the demigods, who make the senses work. So these are required these three creations, the third, the fourth, and the fifth creation, are the creations of the elements, these three Aribhautika, Aridaivika, and Ariyatmika persons, because it's getting to be the time for the living entities to come. So these are the elements that are required for the living entities to start inhabiting their material bodies. And then the sixth creation is the creation of the ignorance, because the soul has to identify with these Ariyatmika, Aribhautika, and Aridaivika persons. So ignorance is created. Avidya. And that is the sixth creation done by the Lord. And then basically, at that point, he hands it over to Lord Brahma for the remainder of the creations, because then it's time for the living entities. So the seventh creation... And then... Now hear from me. Oh, there's a purport to that one. Okay. This is reading about a third of the way down of the purport. After the creation of the demigods, all entities are covered by the darkness of ignorance. Each and every living entity, being in the material world, is conditioned by the mentality of lording it over the resources of material nature. That's what ignorance does. It puts us in a consciousness which is ignorant, making us think that we, with our bodies, can enjoy matter. That's ignorance. Be deeply involved in that. That is what happened. That's a product of false ego in this way. So although a living entity is not the master of the material world, he is conditioned by ignorance, by the false impression of being the proprietor of material things. The energy of the Lord called avidya, that means the lack of knowledge or ignorance, is the bewildering factor of the conditioned souls. The material nature is called avidya, or ignorance. But to the devotees of the Lord engaged in pure devotional service, this energy becomes vidya, or knowledge. Pure knowledge. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The energy of the Lord transforms from Mahamaya to Yogamaya and appears to pure devotees in her real feature. The material nature, therefore, appears to function in three phases: as the creative principle of the material world, as ignorance, and as knowledge. It's the three modes of nature. As disclosed in the previous verse, in the fourth creation, the power of knowledge is also created. The conditioned souls are not originally fools. But by the influence of the avidya function of material nature, they are made fools. And they are unable to utilize knowledge in the proper channel. So what is the effect of avidya? This ignorance? What is the essential foolishness? By the influence of darkness, the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with the Supreme Lord. And identifying with the body, he is overwhelmed by attachments, hatred, pride, ignorance, and false identification, the five kinds of illusion that cause material bondage. So the living entities, the trap is being set. All the above, text 18, are natural creations by the external energy of the Lord. Now hear from me, Maitreya says, about the creations by Brahma, who is an incarnation of the mode of passion, and who in the matter of creation has a brain like that of the personality of Godhead. He's empowered by the Lord. So here is the seventh creation. So Brahma's creations are 7, 8, 9, 10. The seventh creation is that of the immovable entities, which are of six kinds. And there's the list of all different kinds of trees which cannot move. Can they? You ever see trees? Yeah? Well, what kind of trees? Huh? Yeah. Good point. But that's not in the sense that they don't move. That's not what it means. They can't walk. All they can do is get knocked down. That is the ultimate thing. They can't get up and walk away. Except maybe in Nepal. Yes, Azra? Not even in Nepal. Adi Baba. I would have thought if anywhere. So all the immovable trees and plants seek their subsistence upwards. They are almost unconscious, but have feelings of pain within. They are manifested in variegated, in so many varieties of these immovable plants. That's the seventh creation. The eighth creation is that of the lower species of life. These are the animals. They are different varieties, numbering 28. They are extensively foolish and ignorant. They know their desirables by smell, but are unable to remember anything within their heart. Or if you can teach, you can get a dog. Here, boy, here, bud. And you call him by his name. Hey, what's the typical name of a dog?
Fido.
Huh? Fido. Fido. Here, Fido. And the dog thinks, Fido. Me. Yes, Prabhu. Spot. Or something. Here, Spot. Sit, boy, sit. And you think he's accomplished something wonderful. That's the most intelligent, practically speaking, of the animals. Not very smart. So then there's a list of all the different animals. These lower animals, from the cow to the goat to the buffalo, with hooves, different hooves. And some have nails. Alligators. Claws, tortoises, elephants, foxes, jackals, tigers. Nepal has tigers? So many? Even to this day? Do they have alligators? I think not. But Australia has alligators, yes? Or crocodiles? Which do they have? Crocs. And then there are, the birds are also included. There's vultures, cranes, hawks, so many birds. And then the human beings, there was one species of human beings, and they stuck their eatables in their belly. This is the eighth creation. The ninth, the human beings are the ninth. So these are all created by Lord Brahma. So So it's the immovable beings, the lower animals, then the human beings, seventh, eighth, and ninth. In the human race, the motive passion is very prominent. They always want to be doing something. Even when they sit down, they want to be doing something, so they make rocking chairs. So you can't even sit without moving and doing something. Humans are always busy in the midst of miserable life, but they think themselves happy in all respects. All good Vidura. These last three creations and the creation of the demigods, the tenth creation, are Vaikrita creations, which are different from the previously described Prakrita, natural creations. The appearance of the Kumaras is both. We'll hear about the Kumaras two chapters later down. And then there's eight different varieties of demigods, which are the tenth of the creations. First is the demigods, two, the forefathers, the Pittas, the Asuras are demons, four, the Gandharvas and Apsaras are angels, the Yakshas and Rakshasas, the Siddhas, Charanas, Vidyadharas, the Bhutas, Pretas, and Pisachas, and the superhuman beings, celestial singers, the Gandharvas, etc., all are created by Brahma, the creator of the universe. Now, Maitreya says, I shall describe the descendants of the Manus, the creator, Brahma, as the incarnation of the passion mode of the personality of Godhead, creates the universal affairs with unfailing desires in every millennium by the force of the Lord's energy. Okay, that's chapter 10. Time, the different creations, and Brahma's part in this. Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Any questions or comments?
Most of the class fell over my head.
Most of the what?
Class fell over my head.
Yeah?
I was just kind of curious, just out of curiosity. You mentioned time.
Yep.
And in the material world, everything, it sort of exists for before undoing, but at the same time for us to get some sense of temporary closure from it.
But even more than that, it exists to not for our undoing, our ultimate doing. Mm. It's ultimately for bringing us back to God.
Yeah, keep us. So the purpose of the time service is to sort of grind us down to we surrender, basically.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay. Everything in the material world doesn't it exist in this pure form in the spiritual world? Does time,
yeah.
Does time exist in
this? Yeah.
What is the purpose of this?
To serve Krishna as pastimes, to make them more and more wonderful. But there's no limitation of past, present, and future there. If you think that went over your head, you should try to understand what time is like in the spiritual world. Just imagine time with no past, present, and future.
I can't really think about it for a while.
Huh? Yeah, me neither. But if we understand that in the material world, time has a particular function of service, to push on the creation. And in the spiritual world, it has a particular function and service, to serve Krishna, to bring Krishna pleasure. Both of them, ultimately, are to bring Krishna pleasure. But in the spiritual world, it is direct, and in the material world, it is indirect. So time does whatever required to make the pastimes of Krishna sweet and wonderful for his pleasure and the pleasure of the devotees. So there's no limitation.
So time in the material world is impersonal creature of the Lord?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or you could say the impersonal feature of the Lord is a manifestation of the time feature too. It was also described like that. Yeah, I mean, it's not like this is easy to understand.
And the other thing, I was just sort of thinking this sort of spaced out for a while. Like the general concept of the creation that we're given is that from the first day, the heavens and the earth and the birds and the trees and the grass and whatever. The sixth day we created man and God like took a nap on the seventh day. Where did they get that?
Maybe they looked down and they saw the Lord sleeping, taking rest on Anantashesha, and thought it was because he was tired. I don't know. Well, this is just a real speculation, but it was this, how it described the creation of the human beings. They're always busy. So they're always trying to be busy, and they're really imitating God in a sense, right? In the sense that he's the enjoyer, he's the controller. So everyone wants to be the enjoyers and the controllers, right? So it's to give them the concept, listen, God even rests one day a week.
Right.
So you should, if you want to be like him, you rest one day a week and don't just be busy in the mode of passion trying to accumulate one day. At least one day of the week you should pray. Not only the purpose of the Sabbath isn't just to take a nap. It's to stop all your usual busy, busy, busy fruitive activities and pray.
It's actually not being prayed. It's going to the picnics and praying here and there.
And the barbecues. Sundays. No, but
Sunday,
that...
Sunday is a day.
Sunday is fun day.
Yes.
The original Hebrews, if they did any work on the Sabbath, they would be stoned to death.
So that's a convincing argument to take it easy, isn't it?
Take it easy, though.
That's how you have to deal with that kind of people, what can you say? He's just empowered by Krishna.
Yeah, so it's not really faulty, it's doing it, but that's very...
So, but whose fault is it then? If it's not his fault, then whose fault is it?
Krishna's fault, really.
Oh, yeah?
It's certainly not Brahma, because... Okay.
It's not Brahma's fault. Okay, we've established that. And maybe it's Krishna's fault, but who else's fault might it be? There's one, we forgot one, something. Some, it could be. Who is that?
It's only Krishna. Everything is Krishna, so nothing else is there. Nothing else is there.
Who are we forgetting that has something to do with it?
No.
Huh?
There is nothing else. He alone is.
Okay.
Yes.
Does anyone have a different opinion to this?
Nothing else exists. Ego Brahma. Let me ask.
Yeah.
I'll finish.
You have to go to Badrinath then. But you have to go in December and January if everything is one.
Idam he Vishwam Bhagwan Vedras. This whole world is Bhagwan. Nothing less than that.
That's what it was said. Yeah. That's what was said there.
That's what it says here.
It said that there's nothing separate from him, but how it is separate from him and how it is not separate from him. That is a different question. That is the teachings of Mahaprabhu. That nothing is separate from him. And the impersonalists emphasize the oneness. And the dualists emphasize the duality and say, no, everything is separate. And Mahaprabhu taught that everything is simultaneously the same and different. But we emphasize the difference because that we are individuals, even though we have Krishna's energy, but we emphasize that we are individuals with free will because we want to serve Krishna. Even though we are Krishna's energy, and in that sense we're not different from Krishna, but we emphasize that we are individuals because we want to serve Krishna and develop our serving relationship with him as individuals, as freely willing individuals. So therefore, we as individuals, when we say that there's trouble in the material world, we don't blame Brahma. But not only don't we blame Brahma, we don't blame Krishna. What we do is take responsibility ourselves and say there's a misuse of my free will.
Is it hard to understand all this?
No, it's not so hard to understand. We have free will. Right?
Who are we?
We are Jivatma. Tatastha Shakti.
We are caught in the same hate machine which is Krishna.
Right, but within that machine, we are Tatastha Shakti and we have free will. If we don't have free will, then what is the use of giving the Vedic formulas and saying you do this and you do that and you do this, you do that? If you have no opportunity to take it up on the strength of Vedic, this is what Baladev Vidyabhusan says. He says that's a proof that there is free will. We have free will. We don't have free will in the sense of we can make something happen, but we have freedom of desire and attempt.
If one tire of a car has a free will and moves in a different direction, you know, what sort of machine is that? What's the perfection of that machine?
But that tire doesn't have free will, that's the difference. But there are individuals. You see that there are so many people going in one direction, and you get certain individuals who decide, no, I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to go to Krishna. In the midst of all the materialism, there are certain individuals say, no, I'm not going to be like that. They exercise their free will. Even though we are caught in the machine, as you're saying, in the sense that we cannot ourselves pull out, but by exercising our free will and freedom of desire and desiring and making our attempt to go to Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates with that. He's the one who actually mrityu samsara vatmani. He is the one who pulls a living entity out of the cycle of birth and death. That's
He is the one who gives remembrance. He is the one who gives forgetfulness just to complete his own purposes. So just to have the whole machine working as he desires.
But does he desire us to go back to Godhead?
No, this is how we are working.
Okay, now. But does he desire us to go back to Godhead? Yes.
Yes.
Then if we don't have free will, why don't we go back to Godhead?
We are going slowly and slowly.
But some are going the opposite direction, quickly, quickly.
Eventually they'll be rounded up.
Maybe. Post-dated blank check, eventually. No. If he desires us to go back to Godhead, then why aren't we back to Godhead? It's because we don't desire, despite the fact that he desires, we don't desire.
Still pulling up, you know, even if we don't desire, one day we'll be beaten to his, you know, desire.
But okay, but we may one day go to his desire, but the reason he wants us to go back to Godhead now. But we don't want to. We want to stay and enjoy.
If he really wants to take, he'll not be able to rope us in.
If we are averse, as long as we are bahimukh, no. All he can do is make a presentation in one sense. But if we desire to be averse,
he doesn't lack any capacity.
But he, part of his capacity is to give us free will.
So that is his given.
That is his what?
He has given this.
Yeah.
Let him test the fruits of that house. I don't think he's really frustrated.
What an interesting statement. That reminds me of I also think that way too. Okay, that's called cutting off the nose despite the face. That means that, okay, if you want to, I'll show you how much you can suffer. I'm going to be really bad. Yeah, and I'm not going to go back to Godhead. I'll teach you a lesson, Krishna. Suffer.
But that's what we all do.
That's what we do do.
Not eventually.
Okay. We don't have any free will. Okay?
I don't know how much we have.
We probably don't have any at all.
I'm not really sure.
In fact, it's all Krishna's fault. Yeah? Now that's the question. If he's the master, what can we do? And the answer is, we should serve him if he's the master. And if we desire to serve him, then we can make our attempt and we leave the results to him. That's what we can do. And the problem is our lack of sincerity and desire. I mean to say, that's his problem. We're so insincere. Yeah, isn't it?
Well, everything is his.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. I would like to discuss this all night, but what to do? The time factor has moved on. Imperceivably, imperceptibly. It's his point, so he must want to end this conversation. If he wants to end it, I would like to continue, but what can we do?
We can't do much.
That's what I was just saying. Srimad Bhagavatam, at least we can agree on this. Srimad Bhagavatam ki?
Jai!
Sri Krishna ki?
Jai!
Sri Sri Gaudataya ki? Jai! Srila Prabhupada ki? Jai! Sri Sri Radha Shyama Sundar ki? Jai!
Inconceivable potencies ki?
Jai! Ah, Achintya Shakti.